Welcome back, OdaFest podcast listeners. This is Jay, and I've got with me Angelo, your host for this wonderful, almost at OdaFest podcast.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my God. I'm a host. Does that make you a parasite?
Yes.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
I'm a pair of something, that's for sure.
Ah.
But more importantly, we have so much in the way of news and announcements. So don't go away, because the schedule is live. That's odafest2026.sked.com. Feel, think, plan OdaFest 2026.
Level up your style with OdaFest souvenirs. Jackets, pants, pins, and cute stationery. Oh my! Slay and step up to the streets in style at our exhibitor hall booth.
And our lineup of talented AMV creators have put together some of the best and most creative videos for your viewing pleasure, with incredible editing and musical selections that will blow your mind. With a variety of prizes, you can also vote on your favorite one to be crowned the People's Choice winner, or which one makes you feel the most or cry the most. Whatever gives you emotions the most.
How It's Made Cosplay Edition invites you to explore the fascinating world of cosplay crafting. Join experienced makers as they unveil their techniques and materials in an interactive science fair format. Get a peek behind the scenes and learn the magic behind bringing your favorite characters to life. If you've ever been enamored by a stellar cosplay, or you just need a little piece of puzzle solved to make yours complete, this is the place for you.
And last but not least, weekend passes are going fast. Weekend passes are 75% sold out and counting. Get your complete three-day OdaFest entry. It's been one of the speediest sales period this year, so for the sake of saving your sanity, get it while it's still hot. That's odafest.com/tickets. We also have the pre-reg and early pickup on OdaFest Thursday, but that's only for weekend pass and angel pass holders. The location may shift depending on weather. Please check your emails.
It is 8 days before pre-reg.
Eight days.
It is 8 days before pre-reg.
Mm-hmm. And if for some reason you are a listener here and you've never been to OdaFest before, you're not aware of our weekend pass policy, we sell out. We've been selling out of OdaFest tickets for like what, 6 consecutive years or something like that?
We have been selling out ever since we came back.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's it.
Last year we literally sold out, I think, a couple hours into Friday.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so usually we get a big boost from Calgary Expo, which we did again this year. Thank you for your support there. And yeah, this is the time. Get your tickets now, because you literally otherwise could be locked out of OdaFest. And seeing as there's, if you're not aware, a lot of construction around the outdoor OdaFest site, you're not going to be able to just kind of hang around outside as much this year, unfortunately. That's not our fault. That's just downtown doing renovations. So you want to be part of the event? Get a pass so you can actually be in the event.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I'm excited, though. I'm excited. I'm not ready, but I am excited. Good God. I did so much OdaFest work today.
Well, I mean, somebody has to.
Listen. Oh, my God. There is so much wonderful work being done behind the scenes, and I'm excited to see every little bit of it. Oh, I have the pleasure. I do have the pleasure of seeing some things early, and of course I cannot speak about everything, but so much is a surprise to me. There is a lot that I only get the brief overview of, and I don't really know what it's going to be like until the day of. So, things like we announced on the Twitter, the Samurai collab that we're doing.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Oh my God, that looks amazing.
Yes.
I had heard of it months ago, and I put it in my brain, and I just, like, checked it out back there. And then I saw it last week, and my mind was exploding.
I put in, because people don't know, obviously, like, we're also a fan of the things that we do. And we're not trying to take away any stock from, you know, our attendees. So we also have, like, a side list just for staff to order on so that we make sure there's enough numbers for everybody involved. And I was like, I saw those pants. I'm like, I will take two of these.
Nice. Nice.
I highly recommend. They look super comfortable. They look very cool. I am kind of in love with them.
I am absolutely a fan of CMRI. They have so much really cool stuff. If I remember correctly, they're based out of Squamish, BC. They are extremely talented, extremely cool. They tend to use, like, very nice linens, Japan authentic dyes. They do things in an extremely, extremely faithful way. It is awesome clothes.
You know what is not awesome?
What's not awesome?
The Steam controller news. God.
Oh.
Damn, dude. Look. Okay, so for anyone who doesn't know, we've been talking about Steam Box as the news drips out. And they recently, within last week, dropped some news about the Steam controller. And, I mean, I'm like 50-50 on how it looks. It's really about how it functions. But it is a hefty price for a controller that, aside from, like, the professional reviewers are getting, we know nothing about a Steam controller other than last iteration. And you know what? The last iteration
didn't exactly
dominate the market.
I have a lot of thoughts on it. I have a lot of thoughts on it, but 150 Canadian. That is a large price to pay. Oh my God, that stings.
It's also kind of, it's a straight up insult. Let's be honest.
Because it is $100 US. It is $100 US. 150 Canadian is equivalent to 110 US right now.
Yeah. It's like, for anyone who wants to do the simple math, like, at most, the exchange rate has been like a dollar to ratio to $1.40. Like it's not, it rarely breaches that. It's usually about $1.35. So that's what we should be seeing. We should expect maybe $139 price tag or something like that. But why are they gouging us for the extra $10? Like, what the
hell? Real. But as far as the Steam controller itself goes, from what I've seen, I actually do think that it's pretty cool. It's not hard for me to be excited about the hardware itself. Because it's literally the Steam Deck controller, but modularized. It is something that you can now attach to your PC or anything else through the USB controller, or I believe Bluetooth. I'm not 100% certain on that. But the way that it works, the trackpads that it has, which are larger than what the Steam Deck has, the way that it has, like, a nice little magnetic connector that is also the wireless dongle, the way that it has a standardized layout and for people to work with, it is something that a lot of devs can work and target, and that will make ultimately PC gaming better. Another thing is, it is expensive, but a lot of other Elite controllers are also really expensive. Like, the Xbox Elite controller is like, what, 200 Canadian or something? I believe there's, like, a special PS5 controller that's also somewhere around the $200 range. So it's not like it's the most expensive controller out there.
Sure.
At the same time, so I actually bought myself a Xbox, I don't know which Xbox controller this, I don't know what the current Xbox is, But I bought a controller for it.
It's the S or the X.
Yes, that one. I bought a controller for it because it was $60 and it works through Bluetooth and works. That's what's important to me. It works. It is a very solid controller. And so that's like half the price, less than half the price of what I would have to pay for a Steam controller.
Mm-hmm.
And what would I have otherwise gotten? I would have gotten trackpads. And that's and rechargeable. My Xbox controller is actual double A's, like some kind of 90s technology. I really don't understand why this thing isn't rechargeable. That still boggles my mind, but at least it has USB-C on weird. It. Like that's I can accept this thing.
Yeah.
$150. Wow. Like,
it's really like it's a slap to the face in several ways. So this is not Steam's first foray with a controller, and not the first foray it has had with a controller that has a touchpad, I believe. But look, I'm not a I don't enjoy the Sony controller layout, but why wouldn't you just get a Sony controller? Like, why wouldn't you just get the PlayStation? Like, it has a touchpad as well. It's got the six axis. Basically, unless you specifically, like myself, like the controller layout for a 360 style controller, you can just go with a Sony controller. And there's like literally nothing wrong with that. I don't understand why, especially because when you think about Steam and it has its like controller option menu built in with the softwares to make everything like super, honestly, impressively compatible with games.
Oh yeah,
I just don't understand what the point of this is, other than like branding.
Like I can't think what they were doing here. They wanted a controller to bundle with the Steam Machine. Just straight up, they wanted a controller to bundle with the Steam Machine. If you are going to bundle a controller with the Steam Machine, you also have to sell it separately, especially when one of the benefits of this controller is the one wireless dongle is compatible with up to four controllers at once. Like, it is a couch co-op machine. That's what the Steam Machine is made for. That's also what the Steam controller is kind of lending itself to. I don't want to say designed for, because if you're going, if you want to say, yes, you and four friends can play at once, and it costs $600 in controllers alone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, that doesn't work anymore. The last time I played that expensive of a multiplayer setup was Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles on the GameCube, and that's because everybody needed a Game Boy Advance and the cable to connect to the GameCube itself. But it was awesome. It was really cool.
Not to mention,
as long as everybody brought their own Game Boy.
Not to mention, like, okay, so you mentioned things like couch co-op, right?
Yeah.
Now, let's be honest. The king of couch co-op is not PlayStation, and it's not Xbox. It's the Switch. And it's been like that since at least the Wii, arguably into the N64 era. You know, like, it's been that. And now, don't get me wrong. I still, maybe I'm just being old and fogey-ish, or cheap, if you want to. You know, I still think in many ways that $100 extra purchase of the Joy-Cons for Nintendo
is
are expensive.
Too much. But, no, I remember seeing that.
But technically speaking, if you want to talk couch co-op, you get two controllers for that purchase. It's two Joy-Cons.
Yeah, it is.
So, you might not love it. It's not as nice a form factor as like a pro-style controller with, you know, handle and everything like that. But they're giving you two controllers, technically, for the price of one. And that one controller, or sorry, that one package ensures that you can have your four people play with just one extra purchase. Not two extra or three extra purchases. You're not going to unseat the king of, you know, couch co-op with prices like this.
No, absolutely not. Now, I was on the fence about it last week when the price was still being rumored. It was rumored at $100, which is what it launched at. I naively assumed that that would probably come out to about 130, 135 Canadian. Still very expensive, but within the realm of sanity, arguably.
Sure.
And I was looking at what you get for that. So it is, to be fair, a very solid controller. It's a very solid controller with very good controls and haptics and everything. It is effectively the same hardware that's on the Steam Deck, but in a controller form factor. That's appealing to me. Of the reviews that were coming out, the biggest complaint, the only complaint that I would personally not like about it, is they were saying, oh, well, the way it feels is it's just hard plastic. Just like the Steam Deck. Just like my Xbox controller, it is just plain plastic. It's not like that soft touch, like rubberized almost coating.
Or, yeah, or like rubberized or with like metal finishes to make it at least feel a little bit more premium.
And the one thing I will give, those rubberized coatings can be a little bit love it or hate it because they feel better. I will argue to the end of time, they feel better. But after about a year of use, they're flaking off and they look disgusting.
That was the big one with the Xbox Series, the Elite controllers. The first generation especially had that complaint. I didn't have one of those, but I did wait for the Series 2 controller. It's a lot better, from what I understand. But I mean, obviously, you can still get lemons from the factory. You just, you know, you can't win them all kind of thing. But overall, a lot more durable. That being said, like...
I like the touchpads. I do. I like what the Steam Deck does. And based on my experience with the Steam Deck, I can say I think this controller would be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Not $150 good though.
Well, that's sort of the other thing. Like what they're trying to I feel like what they're trying to enter is like some kind of premium couch co-op market, which is debatable, because the only real advantage I want to say that the Steambox has is, unlike any other console that's ever come out, maybe in the history of ever, outside of like having backwards compatibility with games, technically the Steambox for many gamers already comes with a library of games.
Yeah.
I think the only technical exception is maybe if you want to count like Game Pass for Xbox. The only thing though is that historically, not that I know the numbers, but historically I don't think that the Steam audience have bought games that were more focused towards a console experience, shall we say.
It's getting more popular. I will actually say it is getting more popular. The more single-player games or the more that console games get ported over, like, Steam is no longer an FPS-dominated platform.
Sure,
it
that is absolutely
dominated
true.
By Elden Rings, Night Rain. It has Resident Evil games. It has Death Stranding. It has so many really good console games and even indie games. A lot of indie games are being optimized for controllers now to the point where I don't think you need a controller to have fun as a PC gamer. I still think that mouse and keyboard is the optimal solution for most games. But there are a lot of games coming out where a controller actually is the most comfortable and most immersive way to play.
Yeah, I can agree with that to a certain extent, for sure.
Elden Ring? I would not play it with a mouse and keyboard at all.
Yeah, but that's an RPG. That's an action RPG. Traditionally, they're usually played on controllers anyways.
I would play Genshin mouse and keyboard. I preferred it mouse and keyboard.
But didn't Genshin only come out for PC initially?
No,
like it wasn't I don't believe it was a simultaneous release.
It was simultaneous for mobile and PC.
Oh, interesting. But mobile is also... Is mobile a good representation of, like, controller-based gaming, though?
Well, that's the thing, because Genshin had to be everything. It had to be every input method. It eventually came to consoles, too. It was not far behind on consoles. Mm. So
I'll take your word for it.
The fact that it felt good on basically every input method was kind of crazy. The fact that Elden Ring only felt good on controller is kind of a mark against FromSoft, but it's just an incredibly complex control set. There's just so much you can do at any given moment.
Mm.
But anyway.
At the end of the day, with the Steam controller price announcement, and, you know, I agree. Like, I've read a quick couple of reviews from usually, like, the pro journal game journalists. I don't think there's too much wrong with the controller other than the price, but the price is a big deal nowadays. Okay.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I'm not to say it wasn't a big deal in previous generations, but nowadays, like, people should be scrutinizing as much as they have been on things like your price. We don't live in an inexpensive or cheap economy, and you're asking for people's recreational dollars, you know? It does not set a good precedent with this price that is offset to the actual ratio of, you know, American to Canadian conversion. And the console is yet to be seen. We, you know, don't know enough about it. And the price doesn't feel like it's going to be competitive at this time.
It makes me worry for the Steam machine. Because when it was announced was before, weeks before RAM went insane. And we were talking about how to be a compelling device, it would have to be $1,000 Canadian or under. There is no way in chance. We will be lucky if it's like $1,500 or under. What if the controller price is inflated to make the bundle deal of the Steam machine with a controller look better?
I mean, I don't need that.
It's like, oh, $1,500, yeah, but RAM is the way it is. RAM is, and besides, $150 of that is the controller, you see. You have to make sure that you subtract it. It would only be $1,350 with that. I don't know.
The other thing is like, you know, if I were to get a Steam Box, or if anyone were to get a Steam Box, I assume that you might just want to hook up your favorite controller to it first anyways.
Yeah. But it comes with a Steam controller. That is what they said.
I know.
So it
they're allowed to say as much as they want.
It is yet to be seen what this means for the greater Steam hardware ecosystem. I like what the Steam controller delivers. I just really, really, really don't like the price point. And at $150, I'm out. I am not buying it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I will wait for the Mad Catz Steam controller, which only makes sense if you lived in the 90s when Mad Catz made cheap controllers instead of $200 fight sticks.
You say Mad Catz, but I am disappointed in you, for there was another, the Logitech.
Oh, fuck controller. No. Oh, God, no.
Hell
God,
yeah, dude.
No. Jesus Christ. Back when I worked at The Source, literally every single Logitech controller we ever sold got returned that week.
Oh, that was like, that was, I'm talking about a time before you even worked at The Source, man.
Oh, I know. I know. But I refuse. I'll buy a Logitech mouse begrudgingly, and that's about it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, speaking of begrudgingly, there has been a rumbling. A rumbling heard across the internet. For
disturbing news,
the One Ring. The One Ring, you see. There is only one of it, after all, and therefore it would obviously look the same in all art, wouldn't it? That just makes sense.
Mm-hmm. There's only one.
What we're talking about is literally hours before we recorded, a massive hubbub came across the internet. Because in Magic the Gathering, there was the ever-famous One Ring from the Lord of the Rings set back in 2023. And Wizards of the Coast just released another version of the card with supposedly different art. The original art was done by Marta Nile, and the new art was by Dan Fraser. What caught people's eye is that the One Ring was just a horizontal flip of Marta's art, with the scribing, the engraving on the outside of the ring, literally blurred out. And if it wasn't enough, if that wasn't enough to make you think, it's the same angle, the same lighting, but the writing's blurred out, Smeagol, heckin' Gollum, and Frodo were visible in the exact same pose, in the exact same position, reflected on the interior of the ring. Marta's art from 2023 was exceptionally fantastic art. And what is being claimed to be Dan Fraser's art is really embarrassing.
Absolutely embarrassing. It's like, here's the thing. You know, there's some things you could say about the art world where, like, first of all, humans invented plagiarism. That's totally true. Secondly, you can say that there's an old saying that goes along the lines of good artists create and great artists steal. But we're talking about professional artists here. We're not talking about some kid still learning to draw. Not that that's 100%
Dan Fraser the best is excuse. 80.
Yeah. I'm like,
he's old. He knows better.
He knows better by a long shot. It is absolutely wild.
And so in the statement released by Wizards of the Coast, Dan Fraser's own words were that he went to reference a copy of the One Ring, and when he painted over a ring that he used for reference, it turns out it was Marta Niles' ring. It was literally, he didn't look up who had done it. He'd gone to Google or something, supposedly, grabbed a picture of the ring, supposedly, and painted over it, supposedly. I actually kind of doubt that it was painted over, because there are so many details exact to the original art. That even if you were painting over something, even if you were using it as a direct reference, why would you not look at what you are painting? Why would you not look at the colors that you are putting down? And why would you not think about what those colors mean, what they are? To do it the way that Dan said he did it means he had to consciously paint Gollum and Frodo in the inner reflection of the ring. That's insane to think that you could get away with that, to the point where it is either, I hate to say it, an age-related issue, or I don't even think that Dan Fraser painted over that part. Like, when you look at the art, I feel like I literally saw the area where they used the magic wand tool. Like, I don't know what else to say. It's kind of, it's baffling.
It's too similar. It's too obvious.
Now,
like, you know, we could make a million, like, AI jokes, for example, stealing people's art.
But AI couldn't do it this exact.
Yeah.
Like, when AI plagiarizes things, it changes too much.
Yes. This plagiarism, funny enough, clearly done by a human.
Like, literally.
I don't know if there's more or less shame in that comment, you know.
I feel like something really, really weird must have happened, where a very early thing, like a proof of concept, must have been mistaken as the final good. I don't know. I have to speculate, because it's just so shameless and embarrassing.
But here's the other thing.
Okay.
Like, the other thing is, like, not that I'm saying that he's blameless, but where are the other checks, you know, in this process? Like, I don't care who your artist is. I understand that they're, you know, established in the industry. But where are the checks and balances of, like, this gets submitted to, like, the editor?
Exactly.
Or, you know, like,
because I hate to put this on Dan, except no, because it's clearly copied. it looks like shit. Like, disregarding that
you're
it
not
was
wrong. It doesn't
clearly
look
copied,
good.
The original artwork looks amazing. The copied artwork looks like it has a Gaussian blur filter. It got scrubbed with a little smudge tool.
Yeah, like...
And it was put on some, like, puke green marble background, which is apparently one of Dan's things. But I'm sorry, that background is hideous.
Understood.
It just looks like shit. Why did they accept that in the first place?
Yes, like, it does seem weird that it got to the point of this being a published work, right?
Yeah. And I want to go with another thing. A lot of people, I read multiple comments online. People were like, oh, it's a ring. How many ways is there to draw a ring? It's a loop of metal. Fuck off with that. The one ring is so iconic. There are so many scenes that you can do with the one ring that are iconic. You could have the one ring on Sauron's smoldering fingers, like we saw in the movie. You could have the one ring in Gandalf's hands, like we saw when he put it in the fire with Frodo. If you want to go the meme route, you could have it on Gandalf's nose, like the old animated version. There is so much you can do with the One Ring. There is so much lore. Mm-hmm. So to say that, clearly the only way to display the One Ring is at one very specific angle, with one very specific sort of lighting, and maybe blur the text on it, maybe blur the inscription on it. Insane behavior. Insane argument.
Mm-hmm.
But you it's know.
The other thing is, it's kind of funny. So we're talking about this. This isn't even like in recent memory. It's not even the first time that card
this
art has been plagiarized.
There was another instance that was shameless to a degree that makes me glad I dropped the game.
You know, I think that's fair.
In Pokemon TCG Pocket, a game that both Jay and I liked and played quite a bit, last year there was quite an incident around it where they released a picture of a card featuring Ho-Oh. Now, the card itself looked great. It was very nice. It was, by all means, a very high-quality card. The problem is, the art was fan art commissioned by a Chinese user called Nanjiujiu back in 2021, 4 years before the Pokemon company released it. And what's crazy is, apparently, the Pokemon company claims it has legal rights to do whatever it wants with the designs and creations of its fans, of basically any fan works the Pokemon company claims copyright to, which is not
absurd.
Good. That is absurd.
Yep.
That is insane. I understand when it comes to copyright, like, characters themselves are copyrighted and trademarked. But just because that's the case, just because if I draw a Ho-Oh, the Game Freak and the Pokemon Company and Nintendo, they all have the right to come and say, hey, that is our intellectual property. You can't do anything commercial with that. You can't be distributing that. You can't be selling that. You can't do whatever. That's their right. But I still made the thing. I have the copyright of the thing that mm-hmm. I made. And so they actually don't have the right to use that. Like, there's kind of a double whammy.
It's absolutely
there.
Wild. Because I'm going to go a funny route with that. That's basically Nintendo saying, or Pokemon Company saying, that they own every piece of fan art ever made
that's
about Pokemon.
That's literally what they're saying. They're
and
saying they own
all fan
art. That's
a dark step there.
Oh, my God. I had a thought that I can't say on the podcast.
Exactly.
It has to do with Lopunny and Gardevoir, and that's as far as I'm going to say.
Sometimes there's a Lucario for you male
listen, listen, listen. Okay. There is a reason that the Pokemon Company put out a life-size 5-foot Gardevoir plushie. They knew exactly what they were doing.
It's true.
But still, what Gate got a low Wizards putty, of Batman. The Coast did was embarrassing. What Wizards of the Coast did was embarrassing. Yes. What the Pokemon Company did was outright scummy. Because that is
true.
That is actively stealing from your fans.
Yeah, from your own community, which is like, do you not understand how you got there in the first place? Like, they're the reason why all the other Pokemon wannabes and look-alike IPs, they're not as successful as they could be, because at the end of the day, your fans are the ones who keep your product going, your IP relevant.
Yeah. It's just crazy. But,
you know,
there is a company who gets it. Mainframe actually kind of gets it. For anybody too young in the audience to understand this, Mainframe was the production studio behind Reboot. And a few of you may remember that from a few years back where we were partnered with Reboot Rewind.
Yep.
It was an amazing documentary series. Mainframe has been apparently re-encoding or doing something with Reboot to get high definition 1080p versions of Reboot. And they're posting them to YouTube. 2 days ago, they posted the first episode of Reboot to YouTube, free to watch, 1080p. It looks, I wanted to say it looks fantastic. That would be an outright lie. I'm sorry.
It looks as a product good of its
as
time.
It ever did.
It looks a product of its time, but clean and so, nice.
To be fair, Reboot is the first TV length 3D CG thing ever. There were other 3D CG things on TV before, but those were like music videos or shorts or things of that nature. Mm-hmm. No, never before Reboot had something come out that was like solid 22-minute episodes every week delivered.
That basically
nonstop.
Had the ambitions of Reboot, certainly.
Yeah. Like, Reboot was, I still think the story, I still think the characters, I still think a lot of it holds up. The graphics are clearly dated. It looks like something released in 1995.
In fairness, I personally don't need the, you know, graphics to be updated. I think it's part of its charm.
To be fair, like, I believe that Reboot has a graphical style and it owns it.
Yes.
There's a thing. There's such a thing as bad graphics that look good because the art style is cohesive. If you look back at really old games, like, I hate to say this because I remember when they were new, The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker or Okami, those games, even on their original hardware, with doing nothing else to them, look great. They look gorgeous. Because they had a visual style that was extremely unique to them, that mm-hmm. was very cohesive. And even though the graphics are not as good as what you could make today, the art style is so charming and cohesive and just good that you the graphics don't hold it back. It's fantastic.
I mean, that's always the argument, especially in gaming, right? Like, where people are like, I always want the best graphics, so I want to get the best graphics card, and so I can turn on the double ray tracing, triple rainbow HD, you know, for my VR headset setup, and this cost me $16,000. You know,
yeah.
And don't get me wrong, great visuals. I agree. I've been playing Pragmata. That's a very pretty game. But my favorite games, and not just because of, like, you know, I played them historically, so like they looked amazing when they were new. My favorite games tend not to be the best looking games that came out of AAA studios. I still enjoy those games, but they have never really been my favorite.
My favorite game was on the GameCube. It was Tales of Symphonia. And to be fair, its graphics weren't bad. I still think it is a decent looking game. But even at the time, it did not look as good as other GameCube games. Like,
saying GameCube games looked good is basically you is basically anyone saying that even at the time of release, they're like, we know we could do better. Even at that time.
Wait a minute. No. There were GameCube games that looked fantastic. Like, quite frankly, Super Smash Bros. Melee. You could pause, you could zoom in on characters, you could look around. It was a good-looking game. Sure. There were other games that, unironically, looked great on the GameCube. Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube looked good. And then there were games that didn't look that good, like Custom Robo or Tales of Symphonia, where I appreciated their art style. Objectively, they were not pushing the console to the limit. But that's okay. That's fine. I can appreciate more than just graphics.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny. This whole much of this podcast has kind of been talking about graphics.
It's been talking about art and graphics and the creations of humans, and sometimes humans creating what other humans already created.
I just think it's funny because, yeah, the artist for the One Ring could have just drawn a different circle.
Seriously, that's all it would have taken.
Yeah.
My man, just, you're an artist. You know how to draw loops. You can make a ring. But for everybody else who's decided that making anything is too damn hard for them, that they really just can't be bothered to click-clack on a keyboard or actually hire somebody actively living. The Oscars has decided AI-generated actors and scripts are ineligible for their awards.
That's even as not a I'm not an awards show watcher of any kind. Even with the video game awards, I only tend to just catch up after the fact as opposed to watching them actively. I gotta say that's pretty interesting, especially for anyone who doesn't know about the Oscars award cycle. It is almost like a political campaign leading up to the actual Oscars.
Oh yeah.
It's not just like, oh, you know, this film was so good, it's so good that it's obviously going to win an Oscar. No. Even if a film was like amazing in so many technical aspects and so many artistic aspects, you need to campaign for your film to possibly win an Oscar. People are literally putting up, like, if you're in Hollywood, people are putting up billboards and actual posters and ads telling Oscar voters to vote for that film or vote for that actor or vote for whatever category. And a lot of that, it has to do with, you know, the media cycle, and a lot of it has to do with the press, and essentially eliminating this category. Or these two categories, AI generated actors and scripts being now ineligible, is kind of amazing. I am sort of interested to see what the fallout is, in the sense that there's going to probably be an equivalent award ceremony that'll crop up, and, you know, they'll be like, we allow for AI, and, you know, to see exactly where that goes. But I like the fact that, you know, the Oscars don't really have to, but they're essentially recognizing the hard work of people.
And I love that.
The unions, yeah, the unions that support, like, you know, what is it? The Screenwriters Guild, the Actors Guild, just actually acknowledging that essentially AI is harmful to the creative process. I think that's very admirable. But I also worry that it's only kind of, it'll be a little bit performative, because I'm like, I don't know how they're going to detect AI script writing, for example.
As far as that goes, it is difficult to say, because when it comes to AI scripts, it really is a matter of, well, you can't hear someone speak an M-dash, for example. It really is going to come down to the integrity of the people who are working with the script or writing the script to be like, yes, we use generative AI in this part. Or people just, the people who are the moviegoers hearing the script being like, wow, this dialogue is kind of awful. I wonder if AI had something to do with it. Or if the script writers were actually just bad.
Mm-hmm. But then I'm also like...
Actors, on the other hand, I mean, there's that Val Kilmer movie coming out.
Oh, is there?
So Val Kilmer died last year. And he's being resurrected as an AI-generated actor.
Well, there was... earlier than that, there was one of the...
The Star Wars movies.
Most recent, yes, for Leia.
Not only Carrie Fisher. In the same movie, or the one directly before it, there was the actor who played Grand Moff Tarkin, who was replaced by AI. Or not AI, CG. Neither of those two were AI. They were explicitly CG. Which was really, really, really off-putting for Grand Moff Tarkin, because his face had anime proportion face. He had big
eyes. It looked like they pulled him out of Clone Wars or some other. Yeah.
Like,
but
aside from that, it was distracting still when I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, after I wasn't 100% certain what was going on. And then when I saw Carrie Fisher, I was like, wow, they're literally pulling people out of their fucking grave.
Well,
they
literally aren't
letting people just die.
Yes, I think that's actually a big part of that conversation as well. But like having the likenesses, like who owns the likenesses and the voice and whatnot of actors who have since passed? Because like I believe Carrie Fisher's thing was like a mix of body double prosthetics and some CGI, which makes sense. But like the AI aspect, I'm very curious about, because like, you know, it's one thing to say that like, you know, this script is not AI, and I agree, but maybe they're being very selective with that language, because like, what if Steven Spielberg is like, for Avatar 16, he's just like, all right, Grok me a script for, or not grok me a script, grok me a concept for Avatar 16. And then they just build from there. Like, is that enough? Is that okay?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. At the very least, even if it's just virtue signaling for now, I like it. That
it's a start.
That does make me happy. The more that people are like, yes, AI is worthless and we hate what you make with it, it makes me happy. Warms my heart.
The only AI that I like is for mathematical models. That's it.
Yeah, machine learning and such. That shit's cool. Mm-hmm. That shit's great. That is making the world a better place.
But generative when people are AI actively being just... like asking Google AI to be like, should I call for an ambulance, I've been stabbed, which is a thing that people are typing.
I actively hate that Google searches give me AI summaries. I don't want them, and I can't turn them off. And I want to see just relevant posts. Give me Reddit threads. I don't care. Just give me anything but the AI summary. It is awful.
True.
Yeah.
Oh, can I give you a really quick story? We're at the end of the podcast, but I recently looked up, I just wanted to, it was like probably Easter or something. I was looking up what stat holidays we have in Alberta.
Yeah.
And I just typed like stat holidays in Alberta. According to Google, we have something like 720 stat holidays in Alberta. And I was like,
wow.
I I don't think I get paid
every day is triple two overtime. Stats?
Yeah, quadruple or sextuple overtime every day that I've ever worked in.
Wait a minute. I think that one has rights. I think that one AI
that
thing
one's correct.
Has rights. Send it up to the province. We got to get it going. We got to get it going.
Get that implemented right now.
Yeah.
It was wild. I actually bothered to take a screenshot and like send it around to people. I was just like, check this out.
Crazy. Yeah.
I don't know where they pulled the data from. That doesn't make any sense.
That's absolutely insane. But that's all for this week. I'm not sure if we'll have an episode next week because we will be in the thick of OdaFest ramp up.
It will be, we'll have to see how things go. We will have a wrap-up episode after for sure. So please stay tuned for that. But please forgive us if we don't find the time to complete a recording for the episode right before. Besides, you know what? You should just be at OdaFest at that time. You should just be enjoying OdaFest.
Yes. Yes. At the same time, us being able to say, if you are listening to this, tomorrow is OdaFest. That would be fun.
That would be fun. All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening.